Welcome to the Fund the People podcast. I'm your host, Rusty Stahl. We all know that philanthropy and nonprofits do an extraordinary amount of good, but we also know that our system isn't working as well as it should. We all know that people drive change, but too many nonprofit people feel less like drivers and more like roadkill. Since the year 2000, I've worked in organized philanthropy and nonprofits where I've focused on leadership and professional development. I've studied the lack of investment in our nonprofit leaders and workers, and how our systems of grant making, fundraising, governance, and management reinforce the lack of support or can transform it. When we invest in our people, we can create a more equitable and effective sector, fueled by rising levels of performance, impact, and sustainability. To bring that vision to life, in 2014, I helped to launch Fund the People, the national campaign to maximize investment in America's nonprofit workforce. Our podcast shares critical ideas, stories, and conversations about how organizations and their funders are strengthening their work by investing in the people who do the work. So buckle up, start your engines, and let's get driving. All right. I am excited today to have Libby Landless-Cobb with us as a special guest from the Bridge Band Group. Libby, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. The most important thing that is in Libby's professional experience is she is an advisory council member to Fund the People. That's her big, big legitimizing factor in the sector. But other than that, no, glad to have
great
an
honor.
Advisory.
Great honor.
No, I'm honored to have you. It's great and have you on the show today. Libby is a key player in the Bridge Band Group, a consultancy to foundations and nonprofits across the United States and beyond. I don't know.
Yeah, we have offices now in Johannesburg and Mumbai.
Wow, that's cool. She's done incredible work in both research and supporting practice on talent issues in the nonprofit sector, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Your bio, you say you're a self-professed talent nerd, and that's the first time I've heard that, but that got me nerding out. I was like, yes, there's a word.
I mean, you don't think people call that behind your back? You know you're a talent nerd too, Rusty.
You're a partner in Bridge Band, and Libby holds a BA magna cum laude in math and music from Wellesley College, a master's in sociology from Oxford University, and an MBA with highest distinction from the Harvard Business School. She is a self-professed talent nerd and has committed her career to supporting the assets we have in the nonprofit sector, the millions of dedicated and talented leaders dedicated their lives to make the world a better place. I think that's the definition of talent nerd. I always ask folks on the show to, you know, go a little beyond the basics of the bio and share a little bit of your personal and professional journey. How did you get from birth to this podcast? What's motivating you? You know, what have you experienced?
Goodness, birth. I don't know how much time we have. I'll hit the highlights. My commitment to the social sector did start when I was young. My father struggled with substance abuse issues when I was a kid, and he was in and out of jail and rehab, and ultimately ended up homeless on the streets of Las Vegas for about a decade before he passed away. So as a child and a young adult, I watched the system fail him, and I yearned for better supports that would help him. I watched the people around him also struggle, and I knew that was the kind of work that I wanted to do. And I was also supported by a wonderful mother, and she was just a powerful, independent woman who held our family together through great crisis and who taught us to be a force for good in the world and whatever we did. And it was the combination of those two things, firsthand experience with struggle and a powerful inspiration from a wonderful role model, that really made me know that I always wanted to do something in the social sector. If you told 9-year-old Libby, the way that that would look is that you would do talent capacity building for as an intermediary for nonprofits and philanthropies. I'm not sure she would know what you were talking about, but I knew in my bones that was what I wanted to do. But I took a little bit of a winding road to get here. I partially because there are not very many obvious on-ramps into the nonprofit sector for folks coming out of college. And I didn't really know what a career in nonprofits would be able to look like. And so I actually started my career at a hedge fund back before anyone really knew what a hedge fund was. My mother thought I was going to go cut hedges, like be in a landscaping firm. I got there because I understood the time value of money. And I knew that if I could get a high paying job early in my career and get some business experience, that would afford me the ability to do things I cared about longer term. And I did that for 5 years, but my desire to do something really meaningful was strong. I was doing board work, I was doing volunteer work, and I just knew that I wanted to do something more meaningful. And so this was back in 2002, 2003, and I Googled bringing business practices to the nonprofit sector, which now I cringe at because it implies that the business world knows all the things and we need to share it with the nonprofit sector. But back then, that was quite a popular term. And the thing that came up when I Googled was Bridgespan. They were very early in their time as an organization, but really were thinking about how to support the capacity of nonprofits to think about how to bring analysis and rigor and process and sort of practice to important issues that I cared really deeply about. And so I ended up going to business school first, but I soon thereafter joined Bridgespan and have been here for the last 12 years. So just very quickly, Bridgespan, as Rusty said, we are a nonprofit ourselves. We've been around for about 20 years. We work with other nonprofits, NGOs, philanthropists, and actually social impact investors as well to accelerate their impact. That's our goal. And we're probably most known in the sector for doing that management consulting support. So we work one-on-one with organizations to build their capacity. We also do that through knowledge sharing. So some of the stuff that we're going to talk about today are research pieces that I helped write, but many of my colleagues do as well, where we take the themes and the learnings from the work that we're doing in the sector, from research that we do, to really share more broadly with the sector through articles, through tools, through other things. And then the third thing we do is leadership and capacity building. And actually, that's where I've found my long-term home at Bridgespan, is in I get to be a talent nerd. I get to really spend my time investing in the leaders of the sector, both through some specific programs. A program that I lead is called Leading for Impact, which is a cohort-based program for executive teams in the nonprofit sector. We also have another program called the Leadership Accelerator, which is an online program for executive teams as well. And we do the research that I mentioned before. That's sort of my path. One thing I will just say, because it may not come up in conversation later, Rusty, is I love what I do. I think, I feel like I'm useful. I care about my colleagues. I can see that I'm helpful in the sector. I also work part-time and have for the last 7 years. Well, actually, goodness, my kid is now 8. He would be so embarrassed that I got it wrong. For the last 8 years.
That's okay. We won't tell your kids.
Okay, good. I will be so much in trouble. But that's been a huge piece of my career, is being able to do the things that I care about, be relevant, be useful, and be able to be there in the way that I want to for my kids. And so I do think, as we talk about talent, that's a big piece, and one that I'm really proud that I've been able to do in my career, and I feel the growth in both work and life, which Bridgespan was just incredible to help me be able to do.
I'm so glad you raised that specifically. That's beautiful. And it's, everything you've said now, I feel like I understand where you're coming from much more than I did before. So that's one of the benefits of interviewing people on a podcast, is you get to actually hear a little more of their story and why they're doing what they're doing, the way they're doing it, that you wouldn't normally hear in an advisory council conversation or something. So, thank you for sharing all of that. And certainly, I think, right, going from that moment of Googling, like, how do you run a nonprofit and bring business skills to where you are now is life, your life has changed. So has mine in terms of having a family and those different responsibilities. So it's interesting too, because I feel like my coming out of graduate school, coming to work in the field was in the year 2000. So it feels like a lot of organizations and groups like Bridgespan have sort of evolved at the same time as I have. And so it's really interesting that, you know, that to hear, I didn't really know exactly how old Bridgespan was. So it's really built quite a brand and I think a lot of recognition and influence in the field. And so that's, you know, one of the reasons I think it's important to hear your voice from within a brand like that, is to understand, you know, how you guys think as these sort of high-powered management consultants who do bring, at least my perception is, and I know Bridgespan kind of spun out of that world of business management consulting into the nonprofit management consulting.
Yeah, although I will say, Rusty, on that, I do think we have been on our own journey on that, because I when I hear you say like high powered, like I cringe a little bit, because I do think that sounds kind of top down. And I actually think that's been a deep part of Bridgespan's journey, is moving from the like, okay, we're business people and we know how to like, so let me come in and solve the problems of the nonprofit sector, to like some deep and meaningful reflection that we as a firm has done, we as individuals have done about our role in enabling the great work that's already being done in the sector, and being a support to really allowing the folks in the field who are doing good work, who have proximate experience, do that work well, and that we don't come with the answers, we come with some tools, but it really is our role to help folks do that well. And I think we are on that journey. We have more to go, but I think it's something I've really appreciated about Bridgespan over the years.
I think that's reflected in the research and programming you do as well, that shift and that journey. So I think we'll see that hopefully as we talk about these things. My first, I think, awareness of Bridgespan really is from this 2006 report called The Nonprofit Sector's Leadership Deficit. Can you talk about that report and what it was trying to do or trying to say, and how you think it was perceived and in the field, and the conversation that helped to start?
Yeah, so it's so the 2006 report was before my time. It was actually led by Tom Tierney, who's the founder of Bridgespan. So all the things I'm going to say about it now are he's not here to defend it, but I think it was, I think, I don't know if this is still true, but at one point it was one of the most read articles on the in Bridgespan's history. And really what it did was it looked at the state of talent development in 2006 and asked the questions, are we going to have the leaders of tomorrow? And through some data analysis, basically predicted that there was going to be a dearth of leaders in the nonprofit sector. Some of this fueled by growth, but a huge amount actually was going to be driven by retirements in the sector. And I think the goal of the article was to say, look, we need to invest in the sector. We need to pay people more. We need to think more creatively about hiring, you know, where we are recruiting and supporting people through their talent journey. It was really a call to action to the sector that we needed to make investments in the sector. I think unintentionally, and Rusty, you and I have talked about this, We foreshadowed a bit of a crisis that, spoiler alert, like actually didn't happen, which is that if you read it, you might have predicted that there would just be empty chairs all over the sector, that we'd be having really difficult time filling those positions, or that they would be filled with people who were not capable of doing the job. And I think what we found is that there aren't empty chairs all over the sector. We actually have grown in a really dynamic way. Largely, the amount of turnover that we anticipated happened, although interestingly, it was not driven by retirements. People stayed in the jobs a lot longer than we anticipated, but certainly by growth of the sector And even as we found in our later research, just around turnover, we did see those vacancies, but we were able to find the folks that were qualified and are doing a great job of running the sector. And the diversity of the nonprofit sector is tremendous that we probably didn't predict in 2006.
Yeah, I think it's the great irony of that report. I mean, when you read it and you go, this is an attempt at like a wake-up call, like invest in your people. It's a dereliction of duty not to do that. But the narrative that kind of evolved out of it was like, oh, there's not enough people. There's not enough leaders or leadership or like people ready to step up and willing to step up. So I think instead of catalyzing is the word I'm looking for, instead of catalyzing investments in the people we had there, I feel like it spurred this like hand-wringing, but not action, this hand-wringing of, oh, you know, what are we going to do? And some initiatives I feel like got started based, at least rationalized with the data that was presented in the report of like, let's go find those MBA students, you know, and bring them into the sector because they'll have the skills and they'll be, you know, we can fill those empty chairs with bright, young, newly minted MBAs. I feel like people use the paper to sort of rationalize those kinds of initiatives, funders and nonprofits.
Yeah, no, I think I certainly see it as the opening slide for many talent development presentations I've seen over the years. And I do think there's sort of, I see it used for good and I see it used in a way that I feel cringe, you know, that I cringe. One is I do think it, you know, people do use it there. I do think there have been initiatives that have been started. I don't know if it was spurred by that, but certainly rationalized by that, that are what we were saying, that there does need to be more investment in that sector, although we both know that not enough of that has happened. But I do also know that it was a way people used to sort of, there's this narrative in the sector that we don't have the quality talent that other sectors do. And I worry sometimes that gets linked there.
I'm sorry I made you cringe about the high-powered thing and that framing. I don't want to be part of the cringe-inducing crowd, but certainly
it's real.
Yeah, it is real. And it seems like you're part of trying to bring Bridgespan out of that, you know, path that idea that business knows better than nonprofits how to run nonprofits, and also trying to shift this narrative that paper, again, has been, I think, falsely used to propagate that we don't have the talented people. I want to make sure we clarify, and I think I'm right that in the paper, when you say leaders, you're really talking about sort of executive directors and, you know, CEOs and that kind of thing, right? That was the focus.
Yeah, that's right. And then we should talk about the follow-up research we did in 2015 that was very squarely focused on the executive suite, so the executive leaders of the nonprofit sector.
Right. And I wanted to state that so that when we go to the next stage, we can see the widened lens on that as well. Because in our conversations over the years, I think you've been a part of reframing the conversation from this sort of deficit of people to a deficit of investment in people, which was the original message that report, I think, was attempting to get at. So let's talk about in 2015, this awesome new research that you came out with and publications. Tell us about the research, and then we can share a little bit about some of the pubs.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So in 2015, and this is where I was leading the research, we wanted to look back at the state of the talent in the sector and follow up on that 2006 article. As I said, we found that we were right in some ways, but we weren't right in others. That there really weren't these empty chairs, that there were great folks in the sector. But we still found challenges. And particularly what we found was that the vacancies that we were predicted were actually persisting. And they were happening over and over again because turnover in the sector was actually is quite high. And as we know, that can cause a real drain on the sector that can hurt impact. And in particular, what we found was, so this was a survey or research that was focused on a survey and some interviews for executive leaders. So C-suite is how we thought about it, but essentially who's the executive team of the organization. And what we found was that 1 in 4 executive nonprofit leaders was leaving their position every 2 years. So a way to think about this is that in 8 years, the equivalent of the entire nonprofit sector senior leaders would have left their job, which I should say is commensurate with turnover in a small and medium business. Like when we looked in the for-profit world, that is sort of what we saw there. But it is really costly to the sector to have turnover happen at that rate, not just costly in the, you know, actual financial costs of having to find a new leader with that kind of sequence, but the cost to the organization in loss of leadership, institutional knowledge, relationships, momentum toward impact. Leadership transitions, as we all know, are really, really disruptive to an organization. And particularly at that speed, it was we were hearing time and again from leaders that that was really hard on the organization. And to further this disruption, what we were finding, we also found that 30% of vacancies were filled internally, which meant a full 70% of searches for a new person was coming from outside the organization, which is, you know, there's research from the for-profit world that there's a significantly higher chance of failure for a new leader. But even if they are successful, they have no institutional knowledge and the ramp up curve is hard. And so again, really draining the sector from having the talent that they need to achieve impact or having them, you know, the focus that they need to achieve impact. And then the last thing that we didn't find in our research, but is really important on this front is that we're not filling enough of these vacancies with people of color. So only 20% of executive director roles, for instance, are held by people of color. And that number has been consistent for decades, just not making the investment that we need to make to have the leadership for the future. We wanted to understand why people were leaving. So in the original article, we predicted that it would be around retirement. And it actually turns out that that's not the case. A pretty small amount of these vacancies are created by retirement. And the majority of it is people moving to other organizations. So we called this the turnover treadmill, I think, where leaders are staying at an organization for a short amount of time and then leaving to go elsewhere. And when we asked them why they were leaving, the number one reason is not going to surprise you was compensation, that people had to take another job in order to move up in pay. And we could spend all day talking about how that we have a chronic problem in the sector of paying people what we need to. But it is a really, really big challenge. A close second reason, and one that we've really focused on in our work, was that they were leaving because they weren't growing and being developed. It was actually something like 50% of them said that they left because of pay, but close to that, a close second was that they left because they weren't growing and developing. And we think there's some good news in that part of the story because there's more all organizations can do in order to keep their talent longer and invest in their growth. And that does not always need to come with a huge price tag. So we often hear people say, you know, we can't actually develop in our talent because we can't afford it. But so much of talent development actually happens on the job. And so one of the things we've invested in Bridgespan over the years is helping folks do that better. Sort of share a little bit about that piece of it, sort of what it takes to do that internally.
Well, before you do, I want to make sure you mention the name of the article so folks can find it. We'll obviously put a link in the show notes. But
yeah, totally. Yeah. So the first article was called The Leadership Development Deficit. So building on the work that we did in 2006, which was called The Leadership Deficit, this is called The Leadership Development Deficit. And then we also wrote a companion article called Smart Funding to Close the Leadership Development Deficit, which was actually focused on the role funders could play, right? So we know now that we've heard from the leaders that they need more help developing their people and keeping them longer in their jobs. And so we actually looked at what roles funder could play. And we did a survey of funders to actually ask them what investments they're making. And in that article, what we found was that Many funders actually understand the need to invest in leadership in order to achieve the outcomes that they care about, but they're actually uncertain about how to do that well. And we found a mismatch between what funders were funding and what nonprofit leaders say they really need to cultivate talent. And in particular, funders were basically paying for more point-in-time investments like conferences, one-off trainings, things like that, that are frankly relatively cheap. But nonprofit leaders were actually asking for something quite different. So the predominant request that when we asked nonprofit leaders, what would you like to be getting funding for related to the developing talent, it was really to help build their internal talent management capacity. So this notion of being able to develop people and support them on the job, as well as things like in executive coaching and cohort type programs that would allow them to build a support network and do deep investment in their talent versus the sort of one-off things. And so we really encouraged through that article funders to better listen to the leaders in the sectors they cared about and to try to align their funding better to where the leaders say they need it most versus the few tools that seem to be the places where if they are funding develop leadership development at all, which many are not, that they were going to sort of the same tools over and over again.
This was such an important contribution to the field. And I just think we need to amplify that article and those messages. I think the message and the research is so good, at least in my talent funding nerd head. And to the point where I am obsessed over for years, I've been obsessed over this paper and this research. And you know, in that research where you asked, you know, what do nonprofits leaders want or need for their organizations in terms of leadership funding support, leadership development funding support, and then what they're able to get, and it showed that inverse ability to get what you really need versus the resources that are available from funders for things that people don't want or need as much. So like those one-off conferences and trainings, which are important. I don't want to denigrate conferences and trainings, but clearly there's a need for more structural, systematic, ongoing development inside organizations to build those muscles up to support their staff. And so you use this term, overhead for talent management capacity. I think that's such an interesting phrase. I'm so curious, like, how did you come up with that, or you and your colleagues come up with that as an option? Because no one's ever heard of that. Like, if you went to your funder and said, can you give me overhead for talent management capacity funding? People would be like, what? And right. That's the unnamed thing, the lack of language we have for that thing is such a problem.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Rusty, it warms my heart that you're obsessed with the article. And yeah, we wrestled with that term for sure when we were doing the survey. And I do think like one piece to name is that nonprofits and nonprofit leaders are starved for overhead to invest in their organizations, period. And so one of the reasons that we have this leadership development deficit is that we don't have those resources to actually resources being money or, you know, executive time to actually invest in this. So I think part of it is that is emblematic of organizations just feeling so stretched thin that they don't have the time to focus on this. I do think though, like that piece around help building the capacity to do this internally, there was another one that was factored really high in the survey around the technical expertise to do it well. I think speaks to what we have found in our research is the more effective way to build talent in the sector, which is to have the systems in place to do it well on the job. And I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with the Center for Creative Leadership's 70-20-10 model, in which 70% of adult learning and growth happens on the job through real life experiences and opportunities. If you ask people, tell me the single most high impact experience you had that influenced your career and your success as a leader, they always tell you it's, you know, either I got thrown in the deep end, or I had this one opportunity, or I, you know, I had to do something hard and I had to sort of wiggle through it. They do not say I went to this one amazing training and it blew my mind and it changed my life. So it really is those, that growth happens on the job. So 70% there, 20% through good mentorship and sponsorship. So having somebody along the way help you do that. And then 10% through training. And so if you go back to that mismatch, really where the funders are funding is the 10% and the leaders are asking for the 70 and 20. But that 70 and 20, it doesn't take money necessarily. It's not an expensive thing that you have to have a professional development budget, but it takes intentionality and it takes focus from the leaders of the organization to really put a system in place that allows people to do that. And that's actually one of the things that we've really invested in at BridgeSpan is thinking about what that looks like.
Yeah, it takes intention and time, and time is money. So, I mean, there is, at some point, money is a proxy for all these forms of capital, in my mind. Like, if you want managers to actually be spending their time developing their people, that means it's time. They're not doing other things.
Yeah, that is true. And part of the work that another piece of body of research I've done is about the role of the executive team in the nonprofit sector and where they should be spending their time and where they shouldn't. And I do think there is a need for investment up front to get clear about that. But if you're clear about that and you move some things off the table, my favorite topic that I hear executive teams talking about is paint color. Like if you're moving facilities and the executive team is spending time like picking paint color or what should be on the menu at the annual fundraiser, if you can help the executive team elevate to some of these other pieces, and one of a really critical piece of that is the role the executive team plays in developing talent. Over time, I do not think it's money, but I do think there is an upfront investment required to make sure that that's happening in an important way.
Let's move to talk in our remaining time about the programs that you've been building out to support implementation of all this research and help organizations build their teams. So also before we move to that, though, what is that piece of research about that you just mentioned about what executive teams focus on?
Yeah, so those programs that you mentioned, Rusty, are built around some research we did a number of years ago about how to develop talent in the nonprofit sector, and particularly how organizations can develop the talent pipelines they need for the future. And it was based on some of the research from Center for Creative Leadership and the 70-20-10 model, but we also looked at both for-profit and nonprofit organizations who do talent development well to see what kind of practices they had. And the article we wrote was called Plan A. There's a longer title, which I can get, but we affectionately call it Plan A. Essentially, because what we're saying is we want hiring externally to be your Plan B whenever possible, given a lot of the costs that we've talked about ahead of time. And so having a Plan A about developing your talent internally helps you build those pipelines over time. And sort of the core, what we found in our research was that organizations who are good at developing talent do a few things well. The first is that they get clear and transparent about what good leadership looks like. And they do that by using competencies. So getting clear for your organization, what are the critical few competencies that are most important for developing the talent you need for the organizations, to lead the organization's impact now and in the future? And competencies, just to be clear, are specific skills or qualities that you need in a leader to do the work. And then to use those competencies to actually support individuals in their growth. What we work with organizations to do is first starting with doing good performance evaluation. So setting goals specific to your job and then evaluating whether or not you got those goals accomplished. Like that's the evaluation part of talent development. What are you supposed to be doing and did you not do it? But then in connection with that, helping people identify the competencies or the skills that they need in order to do their job well and to grow as a leader in the organization. And to do that on an individualized basis so that the person can, we're humans, we can only focus on a few things at a time. So picking the critical two or three that are most important for that individual to work on, and then to build a development plan using the concept of 70-20-10 to get really explicit about what actions and investment the leader and the organization need to take in order to get that person the experience they need to grow. And really, there's the power in this approach is a couple of pieces. One is it forces an organization to get clear and aligned on what matters most and to be explicit about that. So back to my comment about just like it being mucky in the nonprofit sector, career pathing in the nonprofit sector is mucky. One of the reasons that is because we aren't clear about what trajectories look like, what good looks like over time, how do you build those skills over time? So using competencies as a way to say, here's what beginning stage looks like for this competency, here's the intermediate, here's the advanced, that helps people really be able to know what's important, what they're shooting for. It also puts process in place to make sure that this is done with fidelity in an organization. And that's particularly important from an equity standpoint. One of the things that the research shows is that where there's more informal systems of mentorship or sort of people mentor people who are like them. And so so many organizations in the nonprofit sector have white dominant, majority white executive team members. And so if you rely on them to mentor and support others in the organization, they are likely to pick people like them and therefore just reinforce those cycles of inequity. And so having a system where everybody gets similar development support, people are really intentional about giving people the opportunities they need to grow, can help mitigate some of that bias that happens through informal systems and actually helps you differentially invest in folks that you want it to develop so that you have diversity in your pipelines of leaders, because there are limited opportunities in an organization. And so thinking really strategically about how you do that can be helpful. So that's sort of the core, is get clear about this, invest in leaders, give them the opportunities that they need and the support that they need to do it well.
I think it's interesting, the top thing about compensation and the second thing about feeling supported and or feeling developed and growing are like the two sides of the coin, if you will. And as I've thought about talent investing and what it means, having both support and development combined is so important, right? I feel like we need kind of both. So the 70-20-10, the idea of sort of baking it into how your job is structured and how you're treated on the job, rather than being this sort of garnish outside that you some may or may not get tapped to go do, makes jobs just better. Like, it makes it more fulfilling. It makes it more meaningful. It makes it like, okay, I'm not only doing this, sweating to get this done for this organization, but it's at the same time investing in me.
One thing that we have heard from folks, implicitly or explicitly, is, well, okay, so if I develop my people, but I only have five, executive team member jobs, and those people I hope are not leaving anytime soon, doesn't that just mean I'm going to develop people and then they're going to leave me because they have nowhere to rise in the organization? Like, how does this help me with a turnover problem? And we say a few things. One is, what if you don't invest in them? What quality of work will you get from them while you're with them? And you're probably likely to keep them longer, even if you can't keep them forever, even if you kept them for another year, 6 months to a year. And you think about like a C-level person who is getting ready to take a CEO role. If they stay in your executive team for an extra year and the whole sector did that, the turnover, the 1 in 4 that's leaving every 2 years goes to every 1 in every 3 years. And that's a huge implications for the sector. So I think it does reduce turnover, and it just improves the quality of what you're doing. And to your point, Rusty, builds the leaders of the sector more fulfilling, even if that is not in your organization for the long haul. So just seems super, super critical.
Right. And if people leave feeling like, oh, I'm leaving with more skills than I came in with because I got invested in, then they're going to be singing the praises of the organization. If they leave because they burned out and you treated them like crap, they're not going to sing the praises. They're not going to become a donor. They're not going to be an advocate or a champion. They're not going to send people job descriptions at your org. So, building a reputation as a good employer who invests in your team is better than the alternative in my mind. So I think this sort of narrow self-interest of the organization versus its people is such a self-defeating frame. I hear that too. I want to make sure, so funders have been investing in these cohorts to sort of help folks learn this framing and the skills to do it in partnership with Bridgespan. So tell us a little bit about that program, how funders have come in and where you're doing this. And
a lot of the concepts and tools supporting the leadership development stuff that I just talked about is available for free on our website. So I'm happy to follow up with links for the nonprofit leadership development toolkit that's on the Bridgespan website. The Plan A resources around specifically around the 7-20-10 development planning are there. So one is we want people to do this more to what we were just talking about. It's just so critical that more organizations are investing.
And what is the Bridgespan website?
It is bridgespan.org. And then if you search for the leadership development toolkit, it will come up. So we want many, many people to do it. We work with dozens of organizations specifically on building these kinds of systems through two programs that we do that are supported by funders across the globe, actually. The first is through Leading for Impact, which is the two-year cohort-based program that I talked about. It's for executive teams, and we do it in specific cities. So we partner with local funders in specific cities to work with a critical mass of organizations in those cities. So right now we are active in Los Angeles, in Detroit, in Chicago, and in Philadelphia. And in each of those places, we'll be working with 50 organizations. And it's not just around talent development. It's all, I call it the Bridgespan full body workout. We talk about strategy effectiveness. We talk about organizational effectiveness, executive team effectiveness. But a really popular area of focus in that program is on what we call investing in future leaders, which is to implement these systems we're talking about here, because it's one of those things that organizations know they need to do, but they need help doing it and they need help carving out the time to do it. And then the other way we provide support for this is through a program called Investing in Future Leaders that's through our Accelerator program, which is a series of online programs that we've developed for executive teams. And these can be done by people across the globe, really walks the teams through the process of identifying competencies and then thinking about how to implement those competencies for greater development-focused support of their talent.
So as we're coming to the end of our time on this conversation, I'm curious, what would be some of the messages you would want to send out there to nonprofit executives or boards or funders? If you had them in a room, you're given a keynote, what would be your headline?
Oh, goodness. Good question. The first is we have incredible talent in this sector and we are worth investing in. And it's just been a pleasure of mine to work with so many incredible leaders across the sector in this work. So one is we are awesome. The two is it is possible to make deep and meaningful investments in our leaders without, you know, going to fancy programs and investing a lot of money. And that actually investing in yourself and in your organizations starts at home. It starts at the top. And it starts with really thinking about how you support your organizations on the job. And people should be doing that more. And I think it will help both with what we talked about in the article around turnover, but it'll also help with culture, right? Getting clear about what good looks like and rallying as an organization around the things that matter most, and then supporting each other and building those skills. That is huge for the culture of organizations. It's huge for the equity of organizations. And I want more people to care about this and become talent nerds with me.
It's a rallying cry. Let's all be talent nerds together.
Join Libby and awesome. Rusty. Get the tattoo.
Well, thank you. Those are brilliant headlines. And I should have asked them at the very beginning. but it really is an important rallying cry. So thank you for the thought leadership you've put in and over the years, as well as on this episode. You've been a great guest, and I really appreciate your time bringing your spirit and your smarts to this conversation.
Awesome. Thank you for the partnership over the years and for this opportunity. It's been super fun.
All right. Awesome. Thank you, Libby.
Thanks for listening to Fund the People, a podcast with me, Rusty Stahl, where we amplify how and why philanthropy should support the nonprofit workforce. For links to the resources that were mentioned in this episode, check out our show notes and more at fundthepeople.org/podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show. And if you enjoyed the episode or you're a regular listener, please share the podcast with your network or at least with one or two colleagues who you believe would find it valuable. Thanks for all you do every day for our community and our country through your nonprofit work. Stick with it, keep your tank full, and take care of one another.